Hello and welcome to Pythagorean Astronomy. I'm Chris North, and what you're about to listen to was originally broadcast as part of Pythagoras' Trousers, a science and engineering show on Radio Cardiff. You can find a full show and listen to past episodes at pythagorastrousers.co.uk. But for now, here's this month's astronomy. In February 2015, the Planck satellite released a new batch of results, an update on previous images and data released about 2 years beforehand. These results contain clues as to the processes that took place in the first tiny fraction of the universe's existence, as well as the formation of stars from gas and dust within our own galaxy. To find out more about the mission and what its results are telling us, I spoke to Dr. Hiranya Peres from University College London, and I began by asking her to describe Planck and what it's told us so far.
So the main science goals of Planck is to map with a very high sensitivity and precision the earliest light that you can see in the universe, the so-called cosmic microwave background. So this is radiation from when the universe was about 400,000 years old. Now it's about 14 billion years old, so it's like a baby picture of the universe. And at that time, the radiation that was, you know, all throughout the universe was basically uniform everywhere except for tiny little wrinkles or variations. And we see that as little fluctuations in the light that is being mapped by Planck. So Planck has been surveying this light. The mission is actually now complete. And what we are doing now is to take this cornucopia of data that's been recovered from Planck and to analyze it, to try to learn about the properties of the very early universe, its contents, how it's evolving, and even things like when the first stars formed and how that affected the universe.
So Planck acts as almost a time machine. You're seeing stuff from the start of the universe as well as stuff that took place much more recently.
That's right. So this actually happens because the speed of light is finite. So it's a very high speed, but it is a finite speed. So that means that when you look into the distant universe, you're seeing things as it was back in the past. So when we look all the way back to this earliest light you can see, you're seeing a baby picture of the universe. But that light, as it propagates from that very early time to us, also has encounters with other structures that form in the late universe. So on top of this baby picture of the universe, you can get imprints of other signals which happen closer and closer to us, and therefore at more and more recent epochs. And by disentangling all of these effects, you can get a time-varying picture of the universe, which is very detailed, very precise, and contains a lot of information about a variety of things.
And to do this, Planck looks at nine different colours of light. So it looks at microwave light, so much longer wavelength than light we see. It looks at these nine different colours of light, and that lets us see, as you mentioned, so many different epochs in the universe's evolution, and we can disentangle what's been taking place. So apart from this baby picture of the Big Bang, this cosmic microwave background, what other things is Planck showing us?
So because Planck has these nine different colours that it can look at, it can also see the difference between the baby picture and microwave emissions from our own galaxy. So we live inside the plane of a galaxy, and we see its structures projected onto our sky, and they form sort of like a foreground that is in front of the baby picture. And the way that we can disentangle this effects is because as you go through these different colors, the baby picture kind of looks the same, but the colors that are given out by our own galaxy change. So by using those changing colors, we can actually separate that part out. And once we do that, we can, for example, get a very detailed picture of the magnetic field that is there entangled with the matter that's in our galaxy. And that's the first time we've been able to do that. And this light from the galaxy also actually carries a lot of information about something very important, which is almost like a contaminant to something that we're looking for in the very, very early moments of the universe. For example, We think that the process that took place in the very, very early first instance of the universe, the so-called inflation era, created gravitational waves. It essentially set all of space ringing like a bell, and this ringing is caused by primordial gravitational waves. Unfortunately, the signal of that gravitational wave light can actually be confused with something very mundane, which is the alignment of dust grains in the magnetic field of our own galaxy. So that very mundane close-in signal looks the same as this very fundamental ringing in the whole space of our universe. Planck can tell those things apart, and this can give us insight into what happened in the very, very early universe in a very accurate way that has not been possible before.
The astronomer's view of star formation in our galaxy from dense clumps of gas and dust is, to a cosmologist, is just contamination of all that pesky stuff in the foreground in many ways.
Yeah, it's all in the way. But when you then talk to astronomers that study the formation of dust in the galaxy, I mean, this is again a very amazing thing, isn't it? That, you know, all this what we call dust, it sounds very boring, but actually this is stardust. This is stuff that we are all made of in the end. This dust is manufactured in stars and in supernovae, very big explosions of massive stars. Planck can see that dust, and astronomers that study the formation of evolution of dust in the universe are super excited to see this contaminant that cosmologists don't like. So, yeah, there's something for everybody.
The fluctuations in the early universe formed the first stars and galaxies and led to the structures we see around us today. But seeing those first galaxies and those first stars is something that's incredibly hard to do. Now, Planck doesn't see those structures directly, but it does see a signature of what's going on and when the universe first lit up from these objects. And Hirani, how does Planck do that?
Okay, so when Planck looks at the light from the baby universe, it doesn't just see the lights, but it sees the different directions in which light vibrates. This is particularly interesting because when the very first stars turn on, they bathe the universe in ultraviolet light. And this light is so energetic that it dissociates the dominant element in the universe, hydrogen, into its constituents, protons and electrons. So this light has till then been propagating in a kind of transparent universe. And the moment that it encounters this sea of electrons, it becomes opaque to light. And then it starts scattering off these electrons. And it starts vibrating in a particular direction. The light actually acquires a handedness in a way. By looking for the signal of this handedness, we can tell when the first stars turn on in the universe. So Planck has found something quite interesting using this signal. So Planck is able to observe this handedness of the light, the different kind of vibration. And from that, it has worked out that the first stars turned on about 100 million years later than was previously thought. This might sound like a very long time in terms of human timescales, but maybe not such a long time in the sense of the age of the universe. And yet it's really important because the previous CNB satellite, the so-called WMAP satellite, had also made a measurement of this kind of vibration of light and had inferred that the first stars actually formed earlier. But because Planck observes in different colors, more colors than this previous experiment, it is able to subtract this foregrounds, this contaminants from our own galaxy better. And because of that, it has determined that, the earlier experiment didn't quite get the right answer. It was very slightly off. But being very slightly off was enough to make a very confusing situation when you then looked for the very earliest galaxies that you can see in the universe through telescopes. And the difference that you got from the first star's age, looking at the cosmic microwave background, was discrepant with what you inferred by studying the very first galaxies that you could see. And this sort of discrepancy is very annoying to cosmologists because, you know, we can't directly go and make an experiment and make a universe and say the first stars turn on at a certain time. We have to piece together the story almost like a detective or maybe a paleontologist trying to reconcile one set of evidence with another set of evidence. And Planck's finding that the first stars formed 100 million years later than previously thought actually agrees perfectly with what the people observing through telescopes like the Hubble and trying to find the very first galaxies, what they were finding. So now all of these different stories from very, very different types of information about the universe agree, and we have a much better idea of when the first stars turned on. And this later time for this age of the first stars is actually very good news for the next generation space telescope, the so-called James Webb Space Telescope, because before, if WMAP's answer had been right, this space telescope could have struggled to see the era of the first stars, but now there's quite a good chance that it can see it. And similarly, there are big radio telescopes being built on the ground, like the Square Kilometer Array and other smaller radio telescopes. And they are also looking for this signal from the very first stars. And again, now Planck's finding makes it more likely that they will be able to probe this very important era in the universe.
Well, you talked about these imprints from the early universe, and that's actually telling us about processes that took place in the first very, very tiny fraction of a second after the Big Bang. What do we currently understand about the first moments of the universe's existence?
So in the current understanding, the universe underwent a sort of growth spurt in a very tiny fraction of a second. It expanded by an enormous factor, a factor of 10 followed by another 28 zeros. So very, very large factor that it expanded by. And as it did that, there was quantum mechanical processes going on. In other words, the whole of space was kind of bubbling up in little fluctuations. And these quantum fluctuations got stretched out by the rapid expansion of the universe into all the stuff that we now see in the universe. It all originated as quantum fluctuations. So this is an amazing story, which sounds kind of like science fiction, but Planck has been able to test many of the predictions of this theory, which is called cosmic inflation. So it's not inflation as the economy is currently not doing, but it's the inflation of the whole universe. So for example, the little fluctuations, the quantum fluctuations that this process of inflation creates, from which all the subsequent structure originated, if you think about it as listening to a piece of music, there are different frequencies in that music which correspond to different wavelengths of fluctuations. And the universe could be either slightly bass heavy or slightly treble heavy in this analogy. And one of the predictions of many models of inflation is that there should be either a bass heavy or treble heavy setup, but not, you know, the same amount of fluctuations at all the different frequencies. So what Planck has discovered is that the universe is slightly bass heavy, but very, very slightly. And this prediction that was confirmed by Planck actually lent credence to this very science fiction sounding theory. It's a very strong support. Another thing that this theory of inflation predicts is that the universe should have a very simple geometry, essentially the Euclidean geometry that you study in school, which of course is really great when you try to do then calculations calculations as a cosmologist, because it really simplifies the maths. But, you know, it didn't need to have been that geometry. And Planck has confirmed this prediction to a sub-percent accuracy now. And that's really a prediction that has been confirmed. Another thing that Planck has done, and this is a slightly more difficult thing to explain, is that the light from the early universe, if you look at it in terms of little fluctuations, so they're little hot spots and little cold spots compared to the average temperature of the universe. And the statistics of those hot and cold spots are predicted by inflation to follow the statistical distribution of a bell curve, a so-called a normal distribution. And Planck has confirmed that prediction to about one part in 10,000. This is like the most accurate measurement we have at present in cosmology. So there are all these different ways in which we can test this model. And what Planck has done is to verify a large number of them. But there is this, you know, this prediction that there should be primordial gravitational waves, and that's something that we have still not yet confirmed.
And this prediction of early gravitational waves has been the origin of a saga over the last year or so, or over the past 100 years, I guess. But but over the last year or so, it's really come to the forefront of cosmology, with results published about a year ago that a team running a telescope down in Antarctica called BICEP 2 had possibly found indications, or possibly found evidence of these gravitational waves from this inflationary period, this cosmic inflation period. And the evidence they had was not convincing enough for a lot of cosmologists. And in fact, the work with Planck has shown that it's actually probably not that convincing at all because of all these foreground effects.
That's completely right. So this BICEP telescope, of course, is actually a beautiful experiment. It worked extremely well. They reached the sensitivity to start to see a tiny, tiny signal of gravitational waves in the early universe. So, for example, it's more sensitive than Planck in some sense, but it only had one wavelength. So that means it didn't have these nine colors that Planck has, and that's what gives Planck the ability to tell the difference between dust in our own galaxy and primordial gravitational waves in the early universe. So because BICEP didn't have that capability, they could not tell that difference, and therefore the signal that they observed, which they interpreted as being mostly primordial gravitational waves, was actually probably quite contaminated by, you know, dust from our own universe. Dust from our own galaxy. But combined with Planck analysis, now you can tell, using Planck's nine colors and BICEP's one color, what is the expected fraction of gravitational waves in the signal that BICEP observed. And yeah, as you just said, it's unclear whether you can tell the difference just with the current data they have. But both the BICEP experiment and its successes, and also other ground-based experiments from balloons that are flying around in places like Antarctica, very cold places, are going after this signal, because it is a very... it's an amazing signal to discover, and therefore, you know, there's a very competitive effort going forward around the world in order to be the first to discover this. And the way that Planck helps this effort at the moment is that it's got this eye in space with nine colors, and it can tell you whether any signal that you observe comes from our galaxy, or is more likely to come from the very first instance of our own universe.
And I think that's an important point, that although there's a lot of energy expended on being the first to make these discoveries, that we only really get anywhere when these experiments work together, when we use all the information from these experiments together. So BICEP 2 plus Planck has shown us a lot more. And as you say, these upcoming experiments, SPIDER and Keck Array and all these things will will help show us a lot more in the future. So it's going to be exciting times in terms of gravitational waves from inflation, I suppose.
It's going to be extremely exciting. I think that in the coming few years, we'll start to really beat down the frontier on in this particular area. It's a new window in the universe, if these are discovered, of course. And yeah, you know, we do have this fun competitiveness in our field, and I think that's healthy because that drives people to make better and better experiments. But this is such a momentous discovery, were it to be claimed, that you would need corroboration among a whole set of experiments in order to say that this discovery has been made. And so therefore, it's a really good thing that so many different excellent teams are going after it.
Yes, it certainly is going to be an exciting few years for the cosmology community. Haranya Parrish from University College London, thanks very much. And of course, don't forget, if you want to see that solar eclipse we talked about earlier, then the morning of the 20th of March, peaks about 9:30, we'll be out in front of the National Museum in Cardiff, trying to observe, weather permitting, of course. You've been listening to Pythagorean Astronomy with me, Chris North. It was originally broadcast on Radio Cardiff as part of Pythagoras' Trousers.